What's up, guys? This is Mike Casu, and this is the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I met with Lucas Parker. We obviously talk a lot about training, his mental game in the off season and the in season, and we dive into kind of some of the underlying things that make him such a great athlete, what he does differently, how he, you know, his attitude about certain things, certain events, his training, etc. It's a very informative podcast. Hope you enjoy.
What's up, guys? This is Brooke Entz. Just here to remind you that if you want to get free programs from Brute Strength, like Look Better Naked and some kick-ass squat programs, you got to sign up for our newsletter.
This is Mike Casu. This is the Brute Strength Podcast. I'm here in Victoria, Canada with Lucas Parker. Thanks, Lucas. Appreciate you letting us in, man.
Thanks for having me.
So my first question is, how much of the lumberjack persona is real? Have you always been like an outdoorsman chopping wood? What's true? What isn't?
No. I don't know if any of the listeners have seen sort of that photo of me going around splitting the log. It's my Facebook profile, my athlete page. But that's probably the first time I've actually chopped a piece of wood in years. We mostly rely on gas or electric fireplaces here as opposed to real wood. But no, I don't do any manual labor after I, you know, got out of my various summer jobs. That was something I realized I did not want to do professionally. So I mostly move nicely structured masses in the form of barbells as opposed to, you know, actually doing any real manly things.
Right. Yeah. Love it. So you just graduated college. You're a full-time athlete now. I know you're spending more time doing recovery, that kind of thing. What's your overall, like, do you feel like there's more pressure on you now that you have all this extra time and you're a full-time athlete? How do you feel about all that?
Yes and no. I mean, I definitely was the type of person in the past that was like, I would take lots of stuff on and never say no and just kind of go, go, go. And yeah, at one point I was a full-time university student. I guess we call it university as opposed to college here. Mm-hmm. Full-time student at UVic, training full-time for CrossFit, doing a few part-time coaching jobs at like three different gyms, and then trying to be a good boyfriend, as I mentioned earlier in the conversation we had over some lunch. And that was just, it was just too much for me. And I wasn't really excelling in any one of those areas, and like I was getting it done, right? I was finishing school and all that, but always felt like I was sort of like losing out. So as I cut back on things, I sort of got better and better and realized, okay, well, if I am doing CrossFit full time, I can give myself to it pretty fully, and that might be, you know, that might be a rabbit hole that you kind of can't get out of, or it could be a road to success. And things have been going pretty well so far. And in terms of feeling like I need to, you know, fill my day to be comfortable doing what I'm doing and feel like I'm participating in adult society with everyone else, right? Like, I don't necessarily have a 9-to-5 desk job, but you know, if I am sitting around watching Netflix in the middle of the day, I can, and I try and sort of justify that to myself by saying, well, you know, this is my recovery between training sessions. I'm rehydrating. I've got my electro stim on my legs, and you know, that sort of thing. So it's a little bit different lifestyle, but it's working so far.
What are some of those things that you had to sacrifice back then when you were super busy, and what kind of stuff are you sacrificing now to, you know, make sure you're recovered as possible, you have the time, et cetera?
In both sort of phases of my career, it always comes down to social life, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're taking any sport seriously, chances are you're going to bed early, you're watching your nutrition, you know, the weekend is just as full of training as the regular week. So you really lose out on, you know, I don't know what people call them, you're sort of your non-CrossFit friends, right? They have these normal lifestyles where Monday to Friday you work and then you go party on the weekend, and that's kind of when you hang out and socialize. And for me, it's kind of the opposite. Like, if I am interacting with other humans, it's probably like at the gym.
Right.
So it's definitely not balanced in the way that some people talk about balance, but, you know, you make it work, and it's, from a social standpoint, like, if you have really close friends, they will understand that you are, you know, doing what you need to do to chase your passions, and that will support you in that.
Right.
So I'm thankful that I do have still a few close friends that sort of are really excited about what I'm doing, even if I, you know, live in the same city and never really see them.
Right. and they understand that you still care about them, you're doing what you're passionate about, and probably when you see them, it's like you weren't gone at all, right? It's just the same.
Yeah.
I can definitely relate to that. So you always seem to have a plan. Where does that come from? I mean, years ago, I remember you put out something about, like, maybe the 4-year plan to winning the CrossFit Games, something like that. You have a relatively detailed plan for the annual year, the annual CrossFit season. Where does that come from?
I mean, if you want to dig really deep back, I'd say that probably comes from my parents or my dad. Like, both my folks are really smart, intelligent people. They're very successful in life because they are detail oriented. And, you know, for example, like, my dad is the type of guy who's like, well, there's like, you know, you measure twice and cut once. Well, it's like, okay, well, you measure twice and then you cut a little bit away from the mark and then you cut closer to the mark. And then, like, you show me how to cut on a different piece of wood and then you have me make the final cut. Like, it's like very, like, you know, sort of risk management oriented. And I try and take the same approach. I mean, you know, risk management is maybe not the right word, but, like, you sort of try and take into account whether you're approaching, you know, an individual workout or a week of workouts or a year of workouts, like, trying to get the result you want with the minimum amount of extraneous sort of extra effort or extra variables or however you want to describe it.
Right.
And then, you know, more recently, just in across the last few years of my CrossFit career, like, I've just found that I really enjoy the planning aspect of things. I actually don't really like competing. I mean, there are lots of reasons why people compete, but one of the main reasons I compete is that I like to use that as an opportunity to, you know, prove to myself or to disprove to myself that my methods are, you know, sound or unsound. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like, it's a test, not so much to beat other people, but it's like a test of, well, what, you know, what am I doing right?
Right.
In this grand experiment of years of training.
Yeah. What did you do right this year that accounted for that big jump back into, you know, 14th place this year?
One of the things I did right, it's funny we're talking about planning, is that I actually offloaded that responsibility to someone else. Because while I really enjoy the manipulation of variables and the planning of cycles and this and that, I'm not as good at it as the coach that I got, whose name is Cam Bertwell. He's the owner of CrossFit Big City, and he has a history of training a lot of the Canadian Olympic athletes here in town. So he's one of, I think, the only CrossFit Games coaches out there that came from, like, a serious strength and conditioning background before CrossFit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge asset because, like, it's just, it's like, I don't know, it's like, yeah, CrossFit and CrossFit methodologies become a tool in the toolbox as opposed to the worldview, the toolbox, the universe. And it's just nice to sort of have someone with some perspective and some understanding of, because CrossFit is relatively new. And if you've only ever worked with CrossFit athletes, you may not sort of have that understanding of, you know, what a lifetime of training, what a decade of training, what, you know, multiple Olympiad cycles of training will do to someone, or how to progress people through that sort of huge phase of things. So that's one of the big changes I made this year was just putting my trust in someone else and saying, okay, well, you know, it's sort of an ego check and saying, yeah, you know, I enjoy this, but I'm not getting the results I want. So let's try something a little different.
Right.
And it's great for a number of reasons. Even if there was no skill gap, which there definitely is between me and Cam, even if there was no skill gap, I find that I'm more accountable when someone else is prescribing.
Absolutely.
Whereas, you know, if I've designed a week of sessions and it's like, I'm in the middle of a workout, it's like, oh man, this is hard. Okay, well, you know, I was going to do like 5 more intervals on the erg, but let's call it a day because, you know, I got a big day tomorrow. I want to perform well tomorrow and this and that. But it's like, if someone else has written in for me, it's like, oh, this is what's been decided is the appropriate stimulus. And if I don't go through with this, then I'm effing over the program.
Right. And you're accountable to him, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to let down a friend.
Right. I love that. What do you think? I mean, obviously, everybody in the CrossFit community is, they're snatching, they're clean and jerking, they're rowing, doing wall balls, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of people are doing very similar programs. What do you think you're doing differently than, say, people in your region that makes you stand out so much? And then I want to hear, what are you doing differently from everyone in the world?
I mean, that's a big question. I think that's changed year to year. I think I'm getting less different in terms of the workouts I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Like in the past, when I was handling my own thing, I would take a very sort of classical approach to programming, where I'd have, you know, my off season where I was like literally purely doing, like, I remember I would like run to school, and back like maybe a couple times a day for class and like do some lifting. So it was like, you know, fully on the aerobic end of the spectrum and then concurrently fully on the, you know, the weightlifting style, neurological right. stimulation end of the spectrum. And I would sort of, you know, mix those phases up throughout the year and then transition to more sports specific training. And that was sort of great, on paper. And I definitely made progress that way. But I found that when the CrossFit season would come around, it would hit me pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And like the first couple weeks of the open would be like, holy shit. And then I would finally get rolling into it. So I think, or as the years have gone on and with Cam's prompting, I've defaulted, got a little bit closer to what, you know, a typical CrossFit athlete's year looks like, mm-hmm. is that you're doing just a little bit more general CrossFit through the year. Mm-hmm. Having said that,
what does that look like? I'm just curious. What, like, specifically a little more? What, how many traditional CrossFit workouts per week are you doing in the off season?
Right now, I'm just getting back into things, so like 1 to 2.
Okay.
But sooner rather than later, you know, more closer to 2 or 3.
Okay. But we're just talking 6 to 8, right?
No, okay. Not, and yeah, it's. I very rarely, maybe just like very for competition prep only, I would right. do like a couple Metcons in a day.
Right.
But if it's more than one session, they're usually different for different energy systems, yep. for a short explanation. One thing I think I'm still like do a little bit differently is that I do enjoy some of the more, not necessarily odd object, but just like unconventional training, partly because of the environment we live in. There's lots of awesome like trails and beaches and logs mm-hmm. and rocks and like shit to climb and carry around. Whereas, you know, if you live in a big city like most CrossFit participants do, it's just you kind of go into the gym and do gym stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm just lucky to have grown up and been brought up in an environment that is conducive to like strength training.
Right.
So it's maybe something that differentiates me from CrossFit athletes in general. Maybe not so much the West Coast guys, because, you know, we all sort of are in this area and mm-hmm. enjoy that kind of activity. But then not so much as a behavioral thing, but like a background thing, I think I may be a little bit different just in like sort of an athletic way. I mean, most CrossFit Games athletes do have a sporting background. But I've noticed, hopefully it comes across to the viewers and it's not just in my own head, the viewers of the games, but I tend to do a little bit better on some of the weird stuff. So I guess I'm maybe, I don't know what the word is, a little more like adaptable or uh-huh. just like athletic maybe, and kind of pick up the weird skills
right.
fairly quickly.
I think you're certainly, kind of an advantage. You're certainly athletic. And I think also it's like, it's very mental, right? You just have to, beat the object in your head before you're picking it up, or it's just going to throw you around.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think there's both of those aspects. And you were saying earlier how quickly you pick up on new sports and stuff like that. So an odd object is just like that, right?
Pretty much. Yeah.
What is your general goal this off season specifically?
I mean, the goal every off season becomes more and more about like injury management, maintaining, maximizing recovery. And last year, the last season was the best season I've had in terms of injury status. So, and that's the best year I've done in terms of ranking. So I think those two things are related, surprisingly enough. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to sort of keep that ball rolling. So I'm really trying to stay on top of, just all the boring, like physio, like exercises and like drills and skills and stuff to kind of just keep things activated, keep things loose, keep mm-hmm. things mobile, and sort of, get myself as close to like 100% of like nice, juicy, supple healthiness as I can before just the horrible like torrent of the full season training kind of mm-hmm. rolls in.
Supple healthiness, that's an exceptional.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is. you got to be able to wiggle your hips, right? Like I mentioned earlier, though, like having a bit more sport specificity earlier in the year is also one of the things I found that has maybe contributed to my improvement this year. So it's a fine balance between saying, okay, I want to get nice and recovered, because that season just comes around so quick again and again, like especially a five-time games athlete now, like it, yeah, it just, it never feels like there's really a break unless you forcibly write yourself one down on paper and stick to it. So yeah, it's an interesting balance because I'll be going to the this CrossFit Invitational in Madrid. That'll be in December. So that's kind of my first like big, like really, you know, important event in terms of like physical performance. So hopefully it's, what is it now, like mid, late September. Mm-hmm. So I've got, you know, a couple months, 2.5 months to sort of like train hard.
Right. Let me ask you, stuff like that, like the Invitational, I don't know if you do any other competitions, but outside of the official CrossFit season, what is your attitude going into those events? It's hard to be in peak physical condition at that point in the off season. So how do you go into those types of events?
I mean, the Invitational is a special one because it is, you know, there's no way to get there other than being invited.
Right.
So it's quite an honor. It's quite an opportunity to, you know, to represent Canada. Like, how many kids grow up like wanting to be on like a national team?
Right.
Like, you know, yes, this is like CrossFit and it's a fairly new sport, but you still
get 1 million people signing up every year. It's a big sport now.
Yeah. So it's, you know, that's a huge point of pride, and you really want to feel like you give your best effort. So that's a special situation where it's like, when I go into the gym now, it's like, okay, you know, I'm going to sit in my car before I go in there, take a couple deep breaths, say like, you know, what do I want to accomplish? You know, who do I want to be, you know, today in this session and 2 months down the road when I perform for Canada. So that's, you know, that's a little bit different than say an unsanctioned event, right, where you're maybe contacted by the event and they want to, like, have you come and compete.
Yeah.
And that's more, like, a lot of fun. Maybe you get to sort of rub shoulders with your fellow regional or fellow games competitors and kind of, like, see where people are at various times of the year.
Have you always done, like, stellar at those? Or have,
no.
Have you ever? So, no. Okay. That's what I was kind of looking for that. If you have a you know, quote unquote, bad performance at one of those types of events, how do you respond?
I usually see that as a good sign. So historically, and I've done, you know, a few sort of like, I guess, kind of winter or like late fall events. The people that do really well at those tend to, at least in, you know, in my experience and in our region, tend to not do as well once the season rolls around.
Yeah.
So you'll kind of see a bit of a trend, not everyone obviously, but a few people like do really well in these off season competitions, do really well in the open. And then by the time regionals rolls around, don't want to put words, in people's mouths, but it's like, oh geez, maybe they, you know, they peaked too early or they got burned out or whatever. And plus the seasons are kind of not matched up because like for me, like my off season, you know, starts after the games. Mm-hmm. Whereas just based on the numbers, most of the people in my region don't go to the games.
Right.
So their off season starts much earlier, say at the end of May or whatever. So really, like, you know, they'll, whatever, after regionals, take some time off, recover. By the time I'm getting back to training, by the time I'm at like 70-80%, they might be full steam ahead. I see all these guys from my regional setting like crazy PRs online and stuff. It's like, holy crap. But I got to just put faith in the fact that, you know, okay, now is my time to rest and recover and build up and come back. And when it counts, when regionals comes around, that's when I'll be at 100%.
Right.
And that has thankfully proven to be the case for the last few years. Then the next level on top of that is, well, okay, did you peak and at regionals and fizzle out after that and then not show up at the games?
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of partly kind of what has happened to me. I feel like a couple of years ago at the games. So I'm still in a huge learning process of figuring out, like, you know, when and where to really apply the squeeze of the hard training versus the, you know, the recovery. And it's just it's a constant kind of balancing act.
Right. That takes a lot of maturity to like see everybody hitting PRs like that and stay the course. Right.
Yeah.
That's gotta be hard.
Yeah. It's hard for everyone. That's a common conversation among games athletes. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, like, no one is going to, well, a few people maybe, but very rarely is anyone going to post just a random run-of-the-mill average training session. Like, if you're going to put yourself out there online, it's going to be because you did something that you think is badass or legit, or, you know, set a PR or beat someone else's PR.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever people do put out, like, you know, I don't know what you call it, like, you know, mediocre content, it's usually with a huge paragraph explaining, like, oh, well, everyone else is always putting out this awesome stuff, but I want to give you, like, some insight into, like, the daily grind. And they still probably selected some content that's still pretty badass. And you're like, oh, my God, this is their, like, average daily grind? Like, holy crap.
Yes.
So it's just, you know, this is a game that everyone plays.
Looking good or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's, you know, you got to be able to recognize that and,
absolutely,
and just, you know, have some faith and trust your training and spend more time in the gym than you do worrying about what other people are doing in the gym.
You seem like a really calm athlete, at least at the games, at regionals, that kind of thing. Have you always been like that, or are there any ways that you've kind of improved upon that in training?
You know, this is just occurring to me right now. I don't necessarily think of myself as a calm person. But I think visually, just because I have a big beard on my face all the time, you just don't see my facial expressions.
That's a good point.
So I might be, you know, grimacing in horrible pain, but it looks like I'm just holding a poker face, right?
Yeah.
So no that shit. could very well be part of it. But I mean, I do a bit of meditation. I do a bit of visualization.
Nice.
I do a lot of, like, breathing exercises and stuff. And I'm well aware that.
What do you do when you with the visualization? Take us through one of those exercises. What does that look like?
Well, a couple different examples. I mean, the simplest, easiest one I find is weightlifting movements. Mm-hmm. Simply, it's a matter of time. Visualization gets harder with time because it's like any mental practice. Like, to focus on something for a long time is challenging. That's not sort of in our nature. So if you are, you know, having a nice weightlifting workout, that's a great time to practice, even like between sets. Like, okay, how did that lift go? I'm going to go back on it in my head. Like, oh, that didn't feel quite right. Like, I was a little bit off balance or whatever. So I'm going to sit here, like, take a couple breaths, really visualize. Heck, you could just be visualizing, you know, the breaking of the bar off the floor, moving to the knees, and just really, like, feeling in your mind, feeling in your body, like, what that feels like. I got to get that right.
Right.
Feels good. Okay, go hit the lift. Oh, maybe it was a little better.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that the night before the session. You can, you know, do that all day or whatever.
Right.
And then for more, like, I guess, sport-specific events, a really good example I use a lot is at regionals. Not sure this year. Yeah, this year or a couple years ago, we were the first region to go in the, like, weekends. Like, they do a few, like, subsequent weekends of regionals. So we were the first one. So that means we had they announced the workouts. We had the least amount of time before our regional went, and we had to perform first. So there really wasn't a lot of time to practice the workouts again and again and again, and, like, you know, work on your times and work on your strategies, because you would get burned out and overtrain and injured. However, you could spend all the time you wanted in your head, you know, going through things. So I would, you know, sit there with a stopwatch and say, okay, you know, shut my eyes. Okay, 3, 2, 1, go, beep. And I'm like, okay, this was for Nasty Girls V2. So it was like, you know, you'd run, what did it start with? Pistols? It was, I forget what it, but it was pistols, muscle ups, and hang cleans, right? So 3, 2, 1, go, and you go through your pistols, whatever, and, like, okay, now I got to turn around, run back to the rings. Am I chalking up? No, it's the first round. I got to chalk on. Okay, jump up to the rings, first swing, boom. And I'm counting through all the reps in my head and, like, hitting, like, you know, split time after each set is done. And then at the end, I look at the clock, and it's like, oh, okay, I did that in, like, 5 minutes. Well, obviously, I'm rushing things in my mind, so, okay, I got to slow. Let's try it again.
Mm-hmm.
And you go through until you're actually performing the movements in your mind, you know, in your motor cortex, in your body, and you're getting closer and closer to what a realistic performance would be like. And you're like, oh, okay, well, maybe I can pull that off. And that just gives you a huge amount of confidence.
Fucking gold. I love that.
Yeah, it's but that's just like anything else in CrossFit, that's a skill, right? There are so many things you need to get right in a visualization session for it to actually be helpful.
Mm-hmm. The ability to focus is a skill.
Yeah, exactly. And it's fatiguing, mentally fatiguing. So it's something you want to, you know, you go into with a bit of, I don't know, a bit of, focus, obviously, but just sort of intent, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. Like, you really want to, it's all about the intent to, you know, perform well, whether you're actually physically in the gym or you're, you know, getting serious about going through things in your head.
I mean, professional athletes have been using those techniques for a number of years. I think it gets overlooked in CrossFit because people just focus on just getting the work done rather than how it's getting done and that's what's going on in their head. I think that's huge. I had no idea you did anything and that kind of stuff.
Well, another, like, the, you know, the best examples are, say, most other sports, like, for example, like downhill skiers, right? Like, a lot of those sports that involve a lot of speed and precision. But part of that is because those, for the most part, those are standardized sports where they know exactly what to expect, right? If you're a 100-meter sprinter, that's a somewhat easy task to visualize,
right?
Because you kind of know what's going to happen. Whereas in CrossFit, it's like, well, okay, what am I going to visualize? I don't know what's going to happen at the games.
Yeah.
So that becomes maybe a bit more of like a, for like individual skills. But then when you do know a workout is coming out, then maybe you can run through it in your head. So it's definitely helpful. But something that, like you said, is probably hugely underutilized by most athletes in our sport.
I had a pitching coach. His name was Brian Vikander. He taught me a lot of visualization techniques. And we started out, I would have to visualize the laces, right? And that alone, I would drift off, come back to it, drift off, come back to it. And then, you know, by the end of it, I was doing like, say, 10 perfect pitches, 10 perfect curveballs, et cetera. And that was that season, I was the most confident I've ever been on the mound.
Wow.
Very, very powerful stuff.
Awesome.
Let's change pace a little bit. If CrossFit were to get shut down, the company was to shut down, there's no more CrossFit games, what do you think you'd do? What are your passions?
I guess I could go a couple different directions. I could go, I can definitely see myself enjoying weightlifting, and I have competed, the provincial and national level and weightlifting. Having said that, I may be a little bit into the twilight of my career and training, in terms of, you know, any chance at, you know, getting to, say, whatever, like Worlds or the Olympics or anything sort of on the same level as what I've attained in CrossFit. So maybe another sport that that weightlifting style training is highly applicable to, like something like sprinting or bobsled or skeleton.
Bobsled, yeah.
I know that's huge in Canada. I actually went in, was it 2009 or 2010? I went to a Talent ID camp for Bobsled Canada, and then went to a training camp at the sort of the Olympic sliding center there.
She did a bobsled.
Oh, really? Right on. It looks like a lot of fun. And it's speed and power and all that good stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that I got asked to slide for a pilot in the trials or whatever, but unfortunately I had to go back to school. So that kind of got put on the far, far back burner. But it is a fairly late entry sport. A lot of the guys there are in their, you know, 30s, late 30s. So I feel like that's something I could head towards in my retirement if it suddenly came on, like in our in our scenario. The other scenario is, or the other option is that I would go do something like darts.
Yeah.
Not that I'm any good, but yeah, you know, like something where, like, if you can smoke a cigar and drink and still play your sport and make millions of dollars, like, you got it made. So, you know, darts, bowling, golf, like that. I really should have started that at a young age.
I think it's frowned upon in golf now. I think I'm told.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
People are doing worse things.
Yeah.
In terms of, in terms of frowned upon behavior.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So you've been to the games 5 years in a row now?
Yes.
I know this is a tough question, but can you give me a favorite memory? It could be like a realization or an actual like event, anything like that.
Yeah, a couple really, like, memorable moments. One, for whatever reason, I think it was in my first year, 2011. This was at, I think it was the first time I was in the tennis arena, sort of. I think it was a Friday night workout under the lights there.
2010, you said?
2011.
Okay.
And it was the rope climb and clean and jerk couplet. Mm-hmm. It was like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, something like that.
You got heavier.
And and it was just the start of that workout. It was, I think it actually started with the rope climbs, and that was like, you know, my mind was racing, you know, my vision was like whirling all around. I got through the rope climbs, and then after I got like a little bit tired, got a little bit of that out of my system, just that first sort of gripping of the barbell, I just remember so clearly. And it was fairly late at night, you know, the sky was dark, the lights were shining, the stadium was packed, and, for me, for whatever reason, it felt like there's just this sort of like moment of silence in my own sort of little bubble there. And it was like, as my hands were kind of curling around the bar, I could just like feel the knurling, and just everything was like, I don't know, it was like a flow state kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And And that was just like, it was like, okay, this is like, this is where it all starts.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd already done events or whatever, but for me, that was like the start of, I don't know what, that games or my career or whatever. But that was, that That's was awesome. Super memorable. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then another, another moment I really cherish is, the clean and jerk ladder in, 2013.
Oh yeah. That was a big year for you.
Yeah. That, was
event for you.
Big event for me. But what I like was, that I tied for first with Asia Barto, and it was just such a cool moment because here we have this event, you know, it's a very clear, simple task. It's a one rep max clean and jerk. And we have two athletes getting the same weight, tying for first place. And we're totally different, right? I'm sort of like shorter and stockier, and Asia's this like tall, lanky guy. And the backstory to this is that the year before, Asia and I were at the games as well, and it was a clean ladder. And we both think of ourselves as like pretty decent weightlifters. And on this clean ladder, we finished like middle of the pack, like nowhere near the top. And we were just like, geez, man, we had this conversation. We're like, how do, like, you know, come on, we're like pretty good at this. What's going on? Like, we're looking over and like these guys are just like doing these horrible, like muscle exactly clean, power clean, like whatever, like just and, like beating us. We're like, oh, good golly. Like, and then we sort of joked like, oh, well, hey, you know, I both know, like, if this had been a full clean and jerk, we like probably would have won.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we actually like, had that conversation. And then next year it was a full clean and jerk and we both did win. So that was a really, funny. Really cool moment. Yeah.
What about worst experience?
Half marathon row.
Oh yeah.
Well, so that like that and probably that was in, that was 2013. And then 2014, the triple threes where I got a pretty massive heat stroke and sort of basically my games was over at that point. I ended up going to the hospital that night and yeah, it was pretty rough.
Really?
Yeah.
And I can't remember what happened the rest of the weekend for you.
I just sort of like limped along. I had a couple like okay events. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to sort of recover from that. Like, yeah, it was pretty rough.
Yeah.
I'd like the doctor at the hospital was like, oh yeah, you definitely have rhabdo.
Oh shit.
And then, the doctor on site at the games, who is maybe a little bit more familiar with athletic populations, he looked at the test and was like, oh, well, you maybe don't have rhabdo.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of like, well, all
right. Right.
We'll just finish things up and see how things go. And, you know, I ended up, I guess, recovering, but it takes more than a few hours to recover from something like that. And you saw that, and it's kind of funny. I almost took it as a bit of a hit to my ego this year where, you know, I got pretty fucked up by the games last year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this year, and nobody really said anything. There wasn't any real controversy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a couple other athletes ended up going to the hospital as well. But then this year, the 2015 games, like, you know, 10% of the field like dropped out with like injury or like heat issues after or whatever, Murph, like after Murph. Yeah. So it was like, you know, the same thing that I went through, but because, you know, beautiful Amy Thor's daughter gets taken out, you know, now everyone, it's a serious issue. Right. Right? So I found that kind of funny, but it's something that, you know, there's no way around it really. There's all sorts of, you know, would have, could have, should have in terms of like having events at different times of day and whatever. But really, like, if you are maximally exerting yourself over a weekend or over a 5-day span, more than once per day, like, you know, the heat and just hydration and nutrition and recovery, like, that's going to be an issue.
Right.
Unless you're either just totally on top of it and have good luck. But if you're, you know, a little bit not on top of it and have a little bit of bad luck, even if you're an amazing athlete, like, you know, previous games champion Annie Thor's daughter, you could still end up getting taken out of the event,
right.
Which is a shame, but it's a reality. So I know for a lot of the athletes this year, that'll be their, you know, worst career moment. And, that was, you know, one of mine for sure.
Yeah. What did you take away from that? Were you able to turn any of that into a positive mentally or?
Yes and no. I did better this year. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, I learned something. One of the things I did differently this year was I went down just earlier to California and stayed actually in Palm Springs, which is like super hot, 100 degrees or so if we're speaking American. So being in that environment for a week or so before the games definitely I think, gave my system just a bit of extra time to sort of, whatever, change sweat rates or electrolyte stores or all these various physiological factors that can just sort of prime you for, okay, now you're, you know, have to perform hard in the heat.
Right.
Maybe it makes a little bit of a difference. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I still was, you know, suffering hard on the Murph event. I placed pretty close to the bottom of the pack. So there's still some improvements to be made there in terms of like the output and the intensity that I can maintain while under severe system stress.
Uh-huh.
So luckily I didn't end up in the hospital. So I guess that's a PR,
yes.
But, still, yeah, plenty of room to grow, for next season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You ever have any, over your career and just in general, you ever have any self-doubt? You know, I think a lot of CrossFit or a lot of fans, they just see the Instagram posts. They just see, the highlights of people's training and their careers. And as, you know, a former team games athlete, I had tons of self-doubt all the time. And, I dealt with it my way. But you ever have any of that? And if so, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, every day. Things will come up, right? Like, you get a sharp pain here, like in the, let's say, you know, doing a deadlift and you feel a tweak in your back, and like, you know, in that moment you're like, oh my God, my career's over, right? Like, like we talked about just a moment ago with other athletes posting their awesome videos online, you're like, well, shit, like I'm never gonna, you know, thruster like 300 and whatever pounds like freaking so-and-so is doing, or looking at, you know, other performances of the games, and you're like, oh geez, like I'm getting beat by, you know, Sam Briggs on this event, like, come on, man. Mm-hmm. So like little things like that, and then just big picture stuff, like some of that is not so much based in any real, like, I guess, like language or data. It's more like a chemical thing where like you're pushing yourself to the limit and you're just depleted physically, emotionally, cognitively, and like literally, like a lot of athletes suffer from, you know, depression, not because their lives are bad, but because like they're like just their neurotransmitters are like kind of fried. So that just makes you more susceptible to, you know, negative self-talk and sort of just, self-doubt and all these things. But I guess the way to deal with that is to, you know, take things one day at a time. Trust in your training. And sort of one of the phrases I use is like, I ask myself, well, like, did I put money in the bank today? And like, maybe my training session didn't go the way I wanted it to. You know, maybe I'm sore, maybe I'm tired, maybe this, maybe that. But like, did I do something today that made me better? And the answer to that is almost always yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that sort of, that just gives you that little bit of a boost, or a little bit of a light, or a little bit of an indicator that, okay, you may feel like you're just not on a path at all and you're just going around in circles, but okay, well, did I take one step forward today? Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's take another step forward tomorrow.
Right. Are you, in general, would you say you're like super motivated to train? Where do you fall on that spectrum, the motivation spectrum?
That changes a lot throughout the year. Like after the games, every year after the games, it's like, all right, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the way for a lot of athletes. I've had a number of rookies like send me messages and be like, holy crap, like the games this year was like, I don't think I can do this again.
Right.
Like, okay, well, you know, give it a few days, give it a few weeks, give it a few months. Like just, you know, just go back to exercising like a normal human being. Like don't think of it as training, just go do some exercise and like, you know, don't think about it too much, but you will be keeping yourself in shape. And by the time the Open comes around, like next calendar year, if you are, you know, if you are an athlete, you're going to feel that competitive bug come back on, and you're going to be happy that you maintained a bit of just like whatever fitness in the year. So that's like on the extreme end of things. But definitely like, yeah. So after the games, I'll take, a lot of time off, kind of do nothing. And I'm not going to start training again until I feel a little bit of that bug. And for me, that usually takes like a month to 2 months. So I'll be, you know, done with training, like just feel crappy, feel tired, feel sore.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to be when I start training, because then it'll be like a resentment thing. It'll feel like a chore. And if I maintain that attitude all the way until, you know, the start of the Open, mm-hmm. I'm probably going to be in a pretty bad place. So I sort of want to wait until I feel like, oh, geez, like, I'm getting excited for next year. There's all these things I want to accomplish. Like, I'm feeling good about these goals. I'm really excited for the progress I'm going to make. Then it's like, okay, now I'm ready to sort of start putting a plan together, start getting back on the training wagon, and kind of try and ride that positive wave as long as I can.
Yeah.
But definitely, like, pre-competition, when you're in big, heavy training phases, you know, it's not always sunshine and lollipops and roses. Like, right. There's always going to be times you're like, God, I do not want to do this workout. And if you can, you know, find a way to put a positive spin on things and find some value in that and get yourself to do it, then that's great. Mm-hmm. And that takes energy, that takes support. Having those external sort of boosters around you, whether it's people or whether it's, I don't know what, having some other hobby or passion that you can sort of draw like some positive energy from and put that into your training, I think is really huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was my next question. Where do you draw, like, say, inspiration from, motivation from, and support from?
I mean, I think with that sort of thing, I think if you go looking for it, it can often be kind of elusive. It's like, what's the metaphor? It's like if you have a handful of sand, like the tighter you squeeze it, you know, the more it's going to slip out of your fingers. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of one of those things where you just kind of, I don't know, if you maintain, you know, an open mind and an open heart, you will be able to find inspiration in, you know, small moments every day. Whether that's from, you know, people around you who genuinely care about you, and you can see the, you know, the love in their eyes and in their actions, and that they do want you to succeed. Like, that can be like, oh yeah, okay, great. Like, I have, you know, I have people watching my back. Like, right. I can do this because of them. I can do this for them. That can be huge.
I'm not all alone. That kind of thing.
Exactly. And it's a selfish life. Because you know, you're focused so much on what you're doing and trying to make yourself better. And, for most of us, you know, there's not a lot of time and money to go, like, do amazing things for other people. And, you know, you can try and do that throughout the year. But having people around you that sort of, can be very, having people with patience around you, I think, is really important.
Right.
So that's huge. And then obviously there's other athletes too. You can either look at other athletes as like an evil source of competition and like someone you got to beat or who's beating you, or you can see them as a colleague or a teammate or a fellow journeyer on this sort of path of fitness, and you can draw a lot of support from.
Right.
The CrossFit community or the fitness community in general, in terms of people who have been through a similar thing. So the CrossFit games are great because you finally get to meet all those people that tiny percentile of people who have done what you've done and who have, you know, walked the same path,
right.
And have sort of had the same trials and tribulations. So that can be a great source of community and of support. Having said that, everyone at the games is there to do the games, right? It's not, you're not really there to socialize and mix
and
mingle.
Each other, right?
Yeah. And you're kind of like, well, you know, I'm here to get shit done. So that's why now I really value more and more these like off season opportunities, like the Invitational, or like, I got to go to this, training grounds thing at Reebok HQ in Boston after regionals, because it's like, it's a time where you get to meet these other athletes, but the pressure is not on so tight. So you actually get to, you know, joke around, hang out, go out to eat, go to movies, train together. And that's been a really good source of energy for me. Especially this past year, I had a couple opportunities to hang out with, Camille Blanc-Bazinet. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, she's amazing. She's hilarious, whatever. But what I really got from those experiences was seeing how, cause I haven't won the games yet. So seeing how a games champion operates,
mm-hmm.
Seeing how the games champion, you know, walks around, carries herself, speaks about her training, eats, recovers. Like, you know, she'll joke around and complain like anyone else, but I don't think I've ever heard her say a negative thing about a training session or a competition. It's always things like, oh, I want to do this. I'm excited to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to kick ass at this. So whether or not she's had, I don't know if she's had any like sports psych coaching, but she's really good at, at focus and at positive self-talk and at sort of, you know, walking the walk and talking the talk is huge. Like, you know, there's lots of people that use a lot of like self-deprecation, and you see a lot of people say, like, oh, like this sucks, like blah, blah, blah. Like,
right.
This is so lame. Like, oh yeah, I don't even care. Let's just like get
like
it done.
They're not accountable for their own actions.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of because like if they did poorly, then, oh, well, that's okay. Cause I didn't really care about
right.
it. But if you're brave enough, you have the bravery to say, hey, I care about this. I'm going to try really hard at this. That can be huge. That's a scary place to go, actually. But so, yeah, spending some time with Camille has been awesome. I don't think she'll say the same thing about spending time with me.
No.
But we'll get to hang out again at the Invitational in December.
Nice.
So I'm excited to see how that goes. I think Team Canada is going to kick some ass. Yeah,
that's very cool. In general, do you keep in touch with many games athletes throughout the year?
Yes and no. I feel like it's a little bit different in the States, where for whatever reason, like athletes tend to like bounce around a lot more and travel around and train together. And I don't know if that's like a USA versus Canada thing, or the fact that I'm just like on Vancouver Island and kind of like isolated
right.
in my own little like stronghold here. But I definitely don't. I rarely see. Excuse me. Really see any other games athletes during the year.
Uh-huh.
We do have Tyson Takasaki just next door. So we always sort of talk about like, oh yeah, we got like train together a lot. And,
right.
But you know, by the time the season rolls around, like we're on like sort of separate programs and it's hard to like, you know, really gel. So I think that's maybe one of the final pieces of my performance puzzle is getting some good training with some other games athletes like Tyson here in town. That would be a good thing for me to take advantage of.
What do you think that would take to like make that a significant part of your training, like where you could actually make that a part of your regular routine?
It's just another thing. It's just another thing to commit to. You gotta commit to your nutrition, make it a part of your thing. You gotta commit to, you know, getting in the gym once or twice a day, make that part of your thing. And you gotta commit to your, you know, physio and chiro treatments and get that scheduled. So now it's just, you know, you gotta commit to planning your training with, you know, one or two other people. I think that
right.
can be, I've always been, I don't know if the word is, I don't know, not necessarily introverted, but I don't mind being on my own. I kind of like training on my own. And I find success on my own, but, it's definitely, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Like these guys that are training together in an intense, like supportive environment, they're doing really well.
Yeah.
So that could be, I think that could be a good thing for me.
I agree, man. I think that is as important as the program you're following.
Yeah.
For a lot of people. For you sound like way more self-disciplined and motivated than most people. But yeah, if you have someone pushing you every day, then that might over time, you know, show some big improvements.
Yeah. The downside is that if that does become, you know, an everyday thing, depending on your personality, that could be a really big, like, I don't like the idea of competing every day.
Yeah.
So if you are, you know, maxing out and, you know, racing yourself down into the ground against another athlete, that might be great for a few sessions or like an intensive training camp. But if that's your day to day every year, I think for me, for my type of personality and my, you know, various injury history and stuff, it's probably not the best thing for me. So finding a balance between, you know, really switching it on and then knowing when to, you know, lower that, you know, let that flame simmer a little bit lower.
Absolutely.
I think that's going to be key. I'm still working on that.
Word. I love it, man. If you knew everything you know now, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, what would you tell yourself? Would you take away from what you know now? Or what would you do differently? That's what I'm trying to say.
Nutrition. Yeah.
What'd you do? What could you have done better?
I mean, I was in my early days of the games, I was kind of, you know, somewhat humorously, but a lot of it was pretty close to reality, kind of known as the guy that was like, you know, going to the CrossFit games on like a fast food diet. And you know, I'd be eating a lot of healthy food, but also a lot of junk. And just kind of, I definitely had the belief, and in some ways, rightly so, in some ways, incorrectly, that, you know, diet was important, but more from the standpoint of like pure like caloric sufficiency. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, as long as I'm getting enough energy, then my training is going to improve. And it did. But there's two separate curves on that graph. There's your performance curve, mm-hmm. and there's your health curve. And you can go for quite a while with your performance curve heading uphill and your health curve heading downhill. But at some point, that downhill health curve is going to hit a trigger, and that's going to impact your performance. Right. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Even if it's just like you get sick for a week exactly, or so, yeah. right? That's taken away from what you're exactly. doing.
Yeah. So little stuff like just being more susceptible to getting sick, but then, bigger scale things, larger scale things like, your inflammation status is just always like off the charts and you're more susceptible to injury and you're slower to recover from sessions and from cycles and this and that. And so I've really spent the last couple of years, but especially the last year, really like refining my nutrition and my intake of all sorts of things and working on my hydration a little bit more. Okay. And those things are making a big difference.
What's that look like these days?
That changes a lot throughout the year. So I'm at a point right now where I'm not training, crazy volume, so I don't need as much just like raw material going down my face. I try and take a generally paleo-ish approach. But what I mainly base it around is I've done some decent like food sensitivity testing, and so taking out some things that just tend to set me off a bit. Like, eggs are totally paleo, but for some reason I'm like off the charts on the food allergy charts for eggs for some reason.
Really?
Like almonds and stuff. So some, little weird foods that like are healthy supposedly for most people, for whatever reason tend to set my system off. And it's not like they're putting me in the hospital, but if I'm living, a normal life, exercising for health and wellness, and had a normal job or whatever, I could be eating pretty much, whatever I wanted and probably feel fine. But if I'm pushing my body to the maximum all year, if there's any additional little stresses being poured into that big cauldron of stress, uh-huh. then at some point it's going to overflow more easily. Does that sort of make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I usually use like a block analogy, and you have like a threshold, right?
Right.
So same exact thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Do you like weigh, measure your food, track at all?
Not so much.
You're just the kind of go by feel type, right?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways I'm very pen and paper oriented. I like to have, numbers and things written down. And in other ways I do just sort of go by feel. And I think one of the additional numbers I've been using is just like my body weight. So I'll just sort of like weigh myself in the morning, okay. and that just gives me a little bit of insight into how things are going. Yeah. Like, I'll fluctuate a pound or two like every like day or two or whatever. Yeah. But if I notice, a big sway, one direction or the other, then I can sort of like tell myself, all right, I need to, change something with my intake, either more or less. But generally, I think people in general are pretty good at matching their intake to their needs. So if I am training more, I'll end up eating more. And just kind of flows like that through the year.
Right, yeah. All right, man. Well, I know you have a new website. You're doing a tour coming up in Mexico. What else do you have planned on that end of things? What's going on with the website? What's the goal there?
The website has been a long time coming. I feel like, I'm fairly active-ish on social media, but it's all sort of coming from, these different, you got Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube, and they're not really, they don't really have a home base or home platform. So the website is going to be where I can put some more fleshed out content, whether that's in the form of, articles or videos or like physical products like apparel or some electronic products like some ebooks that I'm planning on.
It'd be kind of cool. Putting out some good content. How they have the hats that people wear at the games.
All right.
The big ones. If you could do a beard and everybody's walking around with beards.
That would be cool. But
impractical.
If global warming continues to be an issue, I don't think anyone's going to want a big beard on their face in the CrossFit games.
You can identify your fans very easily, though. keep going with the
So, website. And then the other reason we wanted to get that up and running was because, yeah, I'm heading down to Mexico for hopefully the first of many workshop tours. Mm-hmm. So that's a great way for me to, well, number one, for me to support myself and sort of, you know, build up some resources to get me through the competitive season. And then also just to have fun and to get in touch and interact and give back to the CrossFit community. Because, you know, I like to think that I'm recognized as someone who is, you know, fairly good at the skills and movements of CrossFit and can also communicate that fairly well. So I definitely feel, I have a great opportunity to, you know, help people out with some of the basic fundamental sort of movements and tools that we have in the CrossFit toolbox, as well as some of the more kind of complex stuff that, you know, people work for years to perfect. So I like to sort of, just share my knowledge. And so we got the website to sort of sell tickets online, and we got our tour in Mexico. We're going to be hitting 4 cities this November, and then hopefully planning a little bit something more nice. through the off season. By the time the Open comes around, that's when I know I got to be like, okay, I'm locked down. Right. You know, I'm training hard.
Right.
And I think that's probably the case for a lot of other games athletes, because you don't want to be like, you know, you don't want to be you know, working and traveling around and teaching and have a lot of fun and doing great stuff for the community. And then at regionals comes around, and let's say you give your best performance, but you maybe, you know, you come one spot shy. Right. And you don't want to have that thought in your mind of like, well, geez, why did this happen? Was this because I got, you know, unfocused? Was this because I didn't, you know, train as well as I could, train as hard as I could? So I think that's a mental factor, and that's a tricky balance for a lot of athletes, because, you know, most athletes are, you know, gym owners, seminar staff, you know, whoever, and they, you know, they have to balance that responsibility of being a coach and of being an athlete.
Right.
So I try to split that up pretty, have a pretty stark split in the year.
Right.
That's working so far.
Yeah. Right. That's gotta be tough, especially when you're, you know, you're doing these trips to try to make money, right?
Yeah.
So it's gotta be hard, but that's the best thing you could do, man.
Yeah.
Best thing for sure. Are the tour, is it sold out?
One of them actually is already sold out, and we just started sort of promoting them. Obviously mostly targeting people in Mexico, but if anyone elsewhere wants to make a vacation out of it, we sold out our one seminar in Cancun on the weekend, but we then opened up another one on the same weekend. So if anyone is looking for a nice little winter or late fall kind of getaway, that might be a fun vacation.
Nice.
Plus, I speak English, so you'll be in good
nice.
Hands. Yeah.
Nice. I went to Colombia in South America for the first time. I speak zero Spanish. So that was really interesting, just being like, if I didn't have my business partner around me, just being surrounded by people who I can't verbally communicate with, but it was still really cool. Just, you know, we can still communicate in different ways. So
yeah, especially when, I mean, once you get in the setting of a CrossFit gym, now you start sort of speaking the same language. You know, you move your hands like this. Yeah. You know, you're talking about a snatch. Right. You know, push your knees out. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think we're talking about a squat now. So there you go. Yeah.
Right. Where else can people find you? What's your Instagram, Twitter, all that?
Man, I'm all over the place. My online handle is Tukluk. For those of you who are not familiar with the Canadian lingo, the Tuk is the knit cap of choice. Most American listeners might know it as a beanie, or some sort of a wool cap. But yeah, Tukluk. That's Tokuelluc. And that's my Twitter. That's my Instagram. I think it's also my YouTube handle. And I'm on Facebook. It's just a Lucas Parker athlete page. So
nice.
I like to be pretty active on there. I love it when people, you know, shoot me little questions and stuff. I try and be as helpful as I can, or just kind of say hey and shoot the shit.
Awesome, man. I wanna end on the Twitter story.
Oh, the Twitter. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Before we started recording, I was mentioning I had. Well, Adi was saying that she'd had you know, some. some issues with I don't know if you'd call them fans, but for lack of a better word, some crazies online. And I've had my fair share of that as well. One of my favorite stories is I got this tweet from this guy. And the gist of it, this was back before they had, like, the photo previews that would kind of, like, be visible. So I'll try and give you the short version. So the guy, his tweet was, "Hey, how's my handstand form?" or something like that. Mm-hmm. And there was an image link. And you know how the image links are, like, highlighted in blue usually? So there was just, like, a line of, like, blue, like, you know, what you call, like, hyperlink text.
Okay.
So that was just the image link. So I click it, and for lack of a better word, he's doing the goat.
The goat.
So that's where you tuck your.
Okay.
He's doing the tuck. Okay. So he's okay. There's a picture of a guy in a handstand. He's
tucking his penis. For those of you.
His penis and testicles were tucked back between his adductors and presumably poking out quite close to his perineum and his anus. Are those the technical
yes.
terms? So, but he was facing the camera. So basically what I got was a, what's the movie?
Buffalo Bill.
The Buffalo Bill. And he was in a handstand, like front facing the camera. And I was like, oh my God. And I go back and look at his tweet. And I see just before the hyperlink for the image that I clicked, there was another bit of blue text. And that was a hashtag. So, you know, hashtags also have, like, the blue hyperlink. And it was hashtag mangina. So nice. I really should.
He warned you.
He warned me. I really should have examined the highlighted text more and seen, oh, hey, Lucas, how's my handstand? Hashtag mangina. And I would have just maybe passed on that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I clicked the image and saw a very his handstand form was great, but
nice.
It was not what I bargained for. So out of maybe out of not out of anger, but just out of like the feeling of like I need an adult. Like I retweeted the guy just to so that like other people in the world like knew that I was in distress.
Right,
and the guy got you know he got a few negative comments, obviously. Uh-huh. And he was just like, oh no, like why did this happen? I was like, really? Like you can't put a naked picture of yourself on the internet.
Yeah.
And like not expect some negative repercussions. So if I do get disturbed or offended by incoming various electronic media, I usually try and stand up for myself and put that back out there. So listeners be warned.
Love it, man. That is a great story. We're going to make like a little audio collage for the intro. And that the tuck, your explanation, the tuck, the perineum.
Oh, boy.
That's going to be in there.
Great.
All right, man. That wraps it up.
All right.
If you haven't already, go and sign up at the newsletter at www.brutestrengthtraining.com. Later.